Welcome to this episode of The Soul Frequency Show. I'm Shauna Ekedahl, modern day woman living a mystical life. And how are you? I get so excited to reconnect each week. How is the guided meditation going for you? I would totally love to know. Any new helpful people coming into your life? Any new good news? Signs that you're on the right path or unexpected little happy moments happening for you? I want to hear all about the miracles that are starting to happen in your life. So be sure to leave a review on iTunes and share how it's going. If you haven't downloaded it yet and you want to download the guided meditation that we've been talking about for the past few weeks, you can go to downloadmiracles.com and be sure to stick around at the end of this episode for this week's Take Action item. So, how are the holidays going for you? This is an amazing time of year. I love it so much. And there is a special something in the air. Don't you just feel it? I did a special episode a few weeks back about redefining the holidays and de-stressing at this time of year to be more in the joy of it. And it's a good thing, right, to be rooted in the joy of it all. And one of the things that I'm most thankful for is my five-year-old son, Jameson. If you follow me on Facebook, then you know that he is and an incredible little soul that I gush over all the time. And he really makes this time of year so special for my husband and I. He is a very high frequency little guy, and he is often my teacher in all things positive and good vibey. And he's a super healthy little guy. And health is something that we often take for granted, right? When we have it, and we just think it is, it's always going to be there. And we especially take it for granted in kids, but not all kids are healthy, right? And not all kids get to enjoy life the same way. And it's hard to understand why this happens. In fact, making sense of any illness is hard. But what I've come to realize over the years is that illness can be our greatest teacher. A diagnosis has a way of waking us up. It makes us pay attention to things that we may have took for granted before, but didn't realize actually needed our attention. Many of my colleagues and friends have experienced illness, and it has become a catalyst in their lives to change the way they live, the way they nourish themselves, and to then help others do the same. This week, we are going to be talking about illness as a teacher, and I can't think of two better people to share their journey than Ryan and Teddy Sternagle, founders of MyKidCuresCancer.com. When their son Ryder was diagnosed with cancer, their lives changed on a dime, and they dove headfirst into educating themselves on how to reverse cancer. They have a hub for parents of kids with cancer to get information, coaching, and support on alternative practices, nutrition, and so much more. They have this incredible story of courage and commitment to healing and following your intuition. For them, cancer was a teacher in so many ways. And on today's episode, we talk about facing challenges, rising up to the occasion, and how to trust and empower yourself. With no further ado, my friends, Ryan and Teddy. Ryan and Teddy, I am so happy to have you guys on the show. And we did a little preview of kind of what we're going to be talking about briefly before we came on here. And I just think it's going to be really powerful. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you so much for having us, Shauna.
Hey, Shauna.
Hey, so why don't you guys have an incredible story, you know, that's really founded in your beautiful son. Why don't you share a little bit about how we even are having this conversation today and what took your life in a totally different direction?
Sure. So 3 years ago, I guess, actually it's almost 3.5 years ago now, I was nursing our son Ryder, who was just about to turn one. And Ryan was in the room with me, and we were just kind of going through his bedtime routine. And I noticed a lump sticking out of his back. And at that point, it was just kind of something that we were both like, I wonder what that is. And, you know, we're feeling him and like bending him over and just really just trying to figure out what it was. And it was a Friday, so we had to go through the weekend and, you know, the following week, got a hold of his pediatrician and got in after a few days. And you know, we were pretty concerned about it because you don't typically see a lump sticking out of your child's back, you know, as something being right. Like a normal thing. So So our pediatrician wasn't really that concerned, but around the same time, like other things were starting to come up too, like, you know, the realization that Ryder was really significantly dropping off of the growth chart from being in the 90th percentile to, I think at that point to the 25th percentile, which by the way was blamed on me breastfeeding him and
Breastfeeding. Yeah, that's horrible.
And that was actually from a, like a, you know, holistic oriented doctor as
well. But we had a naturopathic pediatrician and we gave birth in a birth center. So we were very, you know, natural minded and everything. And I was like, wait, that doesn't sound right. But you know, it's your first child too. So you kind of, you know, you do hear a lot, like every child develops differently. So, you know, you try to comfort yourself with that, but you know, the lump really bothered us. And the more I was Googling at the time, I was like, just on the internet, just like 24/7 trying to figure out what it was. Like I was really, really getting really scared. So really pushing for a second opinion. And
he wasn't crawling too.
And he wasn't crawling. He was having a really hard time sitting up. He could barely roll over on his own. And we're talking about like an almost 1 year old. And now we have a second child who is 18 months. And now I'm just like, oh my gosh, like she was doing all of these things at like 6 months old. So now, right. I mean, I would be not telling other parents like that might just be normal, but yeah, so we finally got him in for a second opinion, which was pretty tough just to get that second opinion. It's amazing how hard it is to get a diagnosis. And I know we're not the only ones that have had trouble in our journey with it. But the first person who saw him turned out to be a physician's assistant and just ran x-rays and told us like, oh, well, you know, other than him looking pretty constipated, which was another red flag that popped up, he appears to be fine. And don't worry about this lump sticking out of his back. We'll just check back in 6 weeks. Wow. So, you know, the fact that he was constipated too was pretty huge because Ryder had been pooping like 2-3 times a day, maybe even too much now, you know, in hindsight, but he just stopped and he went 2 weeks without pooping. So, I mean, all of these things were just kind of like flaring up at the same time. And I was really just becoming like a nervous wreck. Like I, at that point, just, I knew that there was something horribly wrong with him, even though he looked like a healthy kid. You know, he was just beautiful, like 1 year old boy, happy. I mean, I knew in my heart of hearts that there was something wrong with him. And on the internet, I kept coming back to neuroblastoma, which is, you know, this rare childhood cancer, which I've come to find out really isn't all that rare. So I, you know, pushed to get into the orthopedics office before that 6 weeks. And I was like, no, there's something really wrong and you need to see him like right away. And we need like a doctor to see him and to tell us like what this lump is. So when we got in, and that still took another week at least.
Yeah. I mean, it was several, and the physician's assistant. Yeah. Same thing. Come back in 6 weeks and that sort of thing. And we had to call back and all
wow.
that.
Yeah. So when I got in and I mean, I was hysterical at that point. Like I was not like eating or sleeping. I mean, I was just like a wreck at that point because I mean, that's how convinced I was that, I mean, something really massively was wrong with Ryder. So I told the orthopedic doctor who saw us, I said, I think he has neuroblastoma and we need to make sure that that's like, you know, what this lump is. And she was like, oh no, you know, kids with neuroblastoma have like huge distended stomachs. And her nurse happened to be formerly in the oncology ward. So, I mean, they were both just reassuring me and thought, you know, I was one of those over paranoid first time moms.
Yeah.
So for a minute I thought, you know, okay, well maybe it's nothing. And then they also said, oh, his body is so small that, you know, the lump that you're seeing, even though it appears like it's close to his spine, it's really far away. So, you know, it's probably nothing to worry about, but we'll still do the ultrasound, which would tell us if we need to do more scans, if it, you know, had neuroblastoma like features. We'll do the ultrasound on his stomach too. So we did the ultrasound, and that of course took so much longer than what they told us it would be. And I could just tell from the technician's face, I knew, you know, yeah, something was not right. And just the length of time it took. And that ultrasound followed with, okay, he needs to have an MRI because what we saw in the ultrasound may resemble neuroblastoma. So, I mean, at that
mother's point, instinct, that's what I'm thinking in my head. Absolutely. The whole time you're telling the story, it's like trusting your intuition, mother's instinct, keep pressing forward, keep asking questions. It's really like frustrating as I'm listening to the story, thinking, you know, how many people might have given up, right? And said, oh, okay, well, we don't need to worry about this since everyone is telling us no.
There were so many points along the way where, you know, if we hadn't have trusted our instinct, we would have just given up. And, you know, come to find out later when he was eventually diagnosed after that MRI and the lump that we were feeling was just the tip of the iceberg. And those were their words. And they came in, you know, at that point, really just at that point, they had lost their mind because they were crying.
They were crying. Yeah, the doctor and the nurse both came in with tears in their eyes. And
yeah, so.
Yeah, but no, that tumor was threatening to paralyze him at any minute. It was
end his life because it could have just severed his spine.
Yeah, snapped his spine, either resulting in death, incontinence, paralysis, or, you know, some combination of the above.
Oh, gosh.
So it was like a miracle, you know, that we found it when we did, you know, and what we were feeling was actually, it was so much worse inside of his body. I mean, it had metastasized to his hip bones. It was, I was feeling the primary tumor in his spinal cord, which was sticking out, but he also had secondary tumors in his stomach too. It turned out to be stage 4 because it had metastasized. So, and the day he was diagnosed, it was like, then they couldn't get him into the hospital fast enough, of course, to start treatment, as you know.
Sure. And, you know, I think this is just one more story, and I'm sure you guys hear so many of them, where we really have to take our health into our own hands, and we really have to listen to our intuition, and we really have to, you know, do the research ourselves, because it's the way that our medical system is set up, that there's not much time that doctors are spending with patients. I mean, certainly on the conventional side, 100%. And a lot of things get overlooked. I hear this in my practice. I hear this, you know, within my circles of friends and family. And I'm sure you guys get so many stories coming to you of the same type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. And, you know, it's so frustrating just to hear, you know, that we're not the only story of like this kind of diagnosis and how long it takes to get diagnosis and the fact that he was stage 4 when he was diagnosed. And timing is like, it's a huge factor in outcome too, because I mean, had he have been diagnosed 6 months later, he would have been put into a high risk category. Had he, I mean, assuming he was still like with us at that point, I mean, so it's frustrating and it's frightening, and people, you know, I hope that people do feel empowered to take their health into their own hands.
And let's talk about choices, right? Because so here you guys are, and you're thrust into this situation once that everyone wakes up to what's really going on. What are the choices that you're being given? Because I think, you know, a lot of times we feel like we don't have a lot of choices. We, you know, the doctor says we have to do this or we have to do that, and it's just the way that it is. What started happening for you guys as far as you seeing what the alternatives were in this situation? And again, listening to your intuition.
Yeah. So with childhood cancer in particular, choice isn't necessarily the operative word. It's there aren't a whole lot of parental rights as to whether you do or do not participate in the conventional medical system, to a large extent anyway. And we were already, I don't know, we were like Teddy said, we were already pretty natural minded. We'd been, I don't know, experimenting with different diets and taking supplements and that sort of thing. Don't, you know, obviously didn't know then as much as we knew now, but we'd seen a bunch of documentaries on integrative or alternative cancer treatments and that sort of thing. And knew we did want to get all of our options I don't know, all the information we could before making a decision, but you get admitted to the hospital and it's chemotherapy, chemotherapy, chemotherapy. You need to be doing this yesterday, that sort of thing. And so it was really tough knowing all that we knew about all the options out there on the natural side, but not having anyone listen to us at all or take any of that seriously on the conventional side. And that's, you know, those are the people you're interacting with at the time. So we did actually, we got a biopsy in the hospital. We actually agreed to get a line put in, you know, a central line that would be delivering chemotherapy, because we had heard about intravenous vitamin C and some other therapies like that that would require that sort of thing for a kid. So we figured we'd put it in, and we actually did at the time. We said, thank you. We're going to go get second opinions and make sure we have all of the facts in order before, you know, before launching into any one particular direction. And, yeah, so that actually, we went home and that lasted, I think, a day. I think that night, Ryder actually, we woke up in the middle of the night. He was burning up. He had a fever, started throwing up all over the place, and we didn't really know what was going on. But all of a sudden, it was 90 miles back, an hour back to the hospital, and it turned out that they'd given him a staph infection in the line when they put it in the first place. So at that point, you know, we had been researching alternative cancer clinics in Mexico and Europe, and just, I don't know, we're going to do something big, but,
no one would even take a child to, basically what we ran into.
Interesting.
With the FDA and the way that it is, even calling outside of the country, and, you know, everyone's like, whoa, did you call Brzezinski? Did you do this? And yes, we did. And literally, because of the way our medical system is set up, like, nobody will touch a child, especially a one-year-old. And with the prognosis that he could be treated in a mainstream hospital with a decent outcome, I think that the only way that he could be treated, you know, something that was like outside of the norm, is like when they're deemed terminal, or when the medical establishment just like completely gives up on them and says, okay, we've done everything that we can. Like, we can either do palliative chemo or just, you know, send you home to die. And then at that point you have more freedom.
Yeah. And so did you guys go ahead and did he have surgery? Did he have chemo? And then you were basically doing other alternative treatments on top of that as time went on?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we launched into that first round of chemo, but knowing that we wanted to do everything we could on top of it at the same time. So it's funny. What's pretty common is to get a feeding tube put in after the kids have already had a few rounds of chemo and now they're all sick and they can't eat and they look emaciated, and that's the only way to get any food into them. You know, we're starting to research just juicing and supplements and all this stuff and trying to figure out how we're going to get it into a one-year-old. And we insisted that we got the feeding tube in up front before any conventional treatment ever touched him. And that was actually a big fight in itself. Just they didn't understand why we would want a feeding tube in when he hadn't even had any chemo yet. And, you know, we just kind of kept on pressing for, we wanted him to be as nourished as possible before getting any treatment. And so we finally did put it in, and it was imperfect action, I would say, but it was as much action as we could possibly take in the quickest amount of time.
Yeah. And we immediately started IV vitamin C and DMSO. Seriously hit like the naturopathic oncologist jackpot where we were living. I mean, we had an amazing, help there. So we had a great direction to start with. We were giving Ryder a ton of supplements, you know, both chemoprotective and anti-cancer, juicing inside of our hospital room. I mean, we were off to the races. Even when we went home to get a second opinion at that point, we were shoving things into his little one-year-old mouth.
And I'm sure that's like making his body so much stronger to be able to go through the chemo in a completely different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ryder didn't lose weight and, you know, in fact, was actually starting to gain weight during that time. And a lot of kids during chemotherapy, like Ryan said, look completely emaciated. And it takes a huge toll on your body no matter what. Like, I'm not kidding myself, but at the same time, I do believe that what we did, you know, helped Ryder to thrive during it and also helped the chemotherapy work better because his tumor shrunk much faster than anyone was expecting.
Yeah. And I think it's great to, people tend to feel like it's an either or situation, right? They're either going to go conventional or they're going to go alternative. And sometimes the answer is a little bit of both. And sometimes it's finding that right balance. And again, listening to your intuition on what that is for you, doing the research yourself, you know, looking into some of the alternatives. And I really feel like, especially for parent-child, but even within ourselves, if we're the one that diagnosed, you know, like, you know, oh, this doesn't feel right, or, oh, this feels like the right path for me. And having the courage to follow that is so important.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and on that note too, I mean, with the chemotherapy working, you know, faster than what was expected, I mean, Ryan and I knew that we wanted him to have as little of it as possible. And so another huge part of our story is that we moved states to be able to stop the protocol halfway through. So we stopped after 4 cycles instead of the 8 cycles that he was set to have, and then potentially more after those 8 rounds.
Wow. So was he seeing, like, was the tumor reducing and he was getting in a better state after the 4 rounds?
Yeah. So even after 2 rounds, I mean, he had just massive improvement. The tumor, I think after just 2 rounds, had like a 70% reduction. And it was made pretty clear to us right away that we wouldn't be able to stop where we were. So we had to look around and find a place, which brought us here to where we're living now in Utah, that would be able to let us have a little bit more say in the matter. And what we did was we took a wait and see approach. So Ryder did have frequent scans, and, you know, MRIs don't have, like, you know, it's not perfect because you're still giving him sedation and you're still giving him contrast. But when you compare that to another 4 rounds of chemotherapy, it's like a huge, you know, huge thing for him. So.
And so after the 4 rounds, the reduction, was the tumor gone or was it reduced, you know, down to just like 10% or something?
Yeah. So the secondary tumors, he had 2 secondary tumors. Those were gone. All the metastasis to the bones was gone. And the primary tumor had shrunk, I think at that 90%. Point, about 90%. And then it continued to shrink probably another 5% or so, you know, just going forward at you know, post-treatment.
During the wait and see.
Yeah, during the wait and see.
And we were still doing our, you know, natural protocol. Yeah. We never stopped
doing
that.
If anything, we just ramped it up more.
Right.
Yeah, but it continued to shrink about another 5%, and it leveled off. It's been, there's still a residual mass there, but it has not moved for a good year and a half now, and it's completely dark on scans and everything like that.
And
so
even Ryder's oncologist, I mean, agrees that it is most likely scar tissue at this point, because another thing that we stopped when we stopped chemotherapy was a kind of scan. It's called an MIBG scan, where basically he's injected with radiated sugar.
It's actually iodine for MIBG. Right. It's the cousin of the PET scan.
Yeah. Wow. So that's what lights up, but it's like 1,000 times more radiation than x-rays. I mean, it's something that we knew right away that we did not want him to have. And luckily that was something that we were able to stop as well. So the MRIs give us less information because it's just showing us the mass versus the cancer like activity level, but it still does give us enough information because at the end of the day, if it's staying the same, I mean, that's what we want to see, or shrinking. We just don't want to see it growing.
Yeah. So he's living a healthy life now and thriving and completely healthy, nothing showing up on the scan, right?
Yeah. So it's been stable for, almost 2 years. And he is running and walking and jumping and doing all of the things that we honestly did not know if we would ever be able to see him do. So he is
He is doing so amazing.
And living quite the healthy life, I'd say.
He is.
So wonderful. It's so beautiful. I'm so happy for you guys. And it's really a testament to what you guys did, right? And I want to talk a little about illness as a teacher, because you know, we all are going to have challenges, right? This is a huge challenge, but we're all going to face challenges in life, and we can really, you know, we can shrivel up and feel like the world is coming in on us and give up in those challenges, or we can rise up to the challenge and say, okay, what is the lesson here? How do we grow from this? How do we move forward? So what for you guys, if you were going to say this illness that Ryder had has been a teacher for you, what has it taught you?
Well, I feel like it's been really empowering, because like you said, you can either, you know, shrivel up, or you can just like rise up to the occasion and, you know, do everything in your power. And I feel like, you know, with childhood cancer, like parents feel like very helpless, like your hands are tied behind your back. You don't really have a ton of choices, but, you know, our message is that you do have a choice in, you know, how you handle things and, you know, what you do to take care of your child and make them the healthiest that they can be. And so for us, that was very empowering and even moving and listening to our intuition. I mean, I think it just made us trust ourselves so much more and just know that we are our children's like greatest advocate, and that there's so much more that we can always be doing, you know, for our kids and for ourselves. And now, you know, we have our site and we're helping, you know, hundreds of, not thousands of other families who watch Ryder. And so it's been, I mean, he's our teacher, but the experience itself has been our teacher as well.
Yeah. Why don't you talk about your guys' website and kind of a little more is a good segue into what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So our website is My Kid Cures Cancer. The site is mykidcurescancer.com. Early on along the way, we started. So when your kid is diagnosed with cancer, it's kind of standard protocol to start like a dedicated Facebook page, just because the kid doesn't have his own Facebook page and you want to make, you know, for fundraising purposes more than anything else. So we had Fighting for Ryder was our original little Facebook page, and we just started posting everything we were doing on there. And it was different than most of those type of Facebook pages you see, because a lot of them are, you know, well, it's childhood cancer. It's not very, you know, it's not a very happy thing. But ours was, you know, here's Ryder getting his IV vitamin C infusion, and here's Ryder drinking his green juice, and here's Ryder taking his supplements and jumping on the trampoline and in the infrared sauna. And so that just started to, gather a lot of natural health minded people started following along, and, you know, we got an incredible amount of really generous donations, because I mean, with all this type of stuff, it's not covered by insurance, and, it's, you know, 100% out of pocket. And we were buying, you know, big ticket, like I said, infrared sauna, you know, Rife machine, alkaline water ionizers, just you name it. We were spending money on it. And, so yeah, that garnered a pretty big following. And at some point, you know, we just started getting so many questions from other cancer parents and patients alike, really just on why we were doing everything we were doing, how we were doing it, how can I do it? That sort of thing, that, it just made sense to start a website. And that's where My Kid Cures Cancer comes in. Came in, I should say.
And we knew too, like through our research, that there is a ton of information out there on alternative cancer for adults, but there really isn't anything, at least at the time when we were researching, like for how you apply it to a child and just like all the unique challenges that come along with it. Because, you know, you're juicing 5 pounds of carrots, like for an adult can drink it. Like, how do you get a kid to consume like massive therapeutic quantities of things? So that's like, we knew that we had to, you know, get our message out there that it is actually very possible, and, you know, that our child like is, you know, kind of the testament to using these therapies.
Yeah. And just putting it out there that there's like actual, you know, it's not just woo-woo pie in the sky. We're reading a blog and trying to implement this stuff. I mean, there's research. You know, you can read a cancer an integrative cancer website for adults, and they'll link to a bunch of studies and stuff like that. But turns out there's a lot of studies on natural compounds for a lot of the primary childhood cancers as well, because that's, you know, late nights in the hospital, I was sitting there on PubMed and all the scientific journal directories, just compiling all the research I could find on neuroblastoma specifically, and what compounds were shown to be, you know, anti-cancer towards it, or finding out what genes were upregulated that needed to be downregulated, or vice versa, and what compounds would do that. And so, yeah, there certainly was nothing like that spelled out. You know, I had to go find that information. And I guess that's kind of the other part of the message is letting parents know that that information is out there. You have to go look for it, but you know, nobody's going to do it for you, but it's out there. And
yeah, it's very real. And it's funny too, like just thinking of what Ryan was saying about it, like not being woo-woo, is like for the longest time, like, you know, people are saying like, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat. And like that whole sugar feeds cancer thing is just like, you know, total crap. But it's like, I just saw a mainstream article, I think it was like CNN, that said, hey, sugar feeds cancer. Like, okay, yeah.
You're like, oh, good. They're talking about it now. This exactly. is awesome. I know. It's the last place it shows up. But so much of this amazing research is being done more and more and more. And one of the intentions, you know, of my show is to take, I guess, what people call woo-woo. I call it fact. I call it truth. I call it reality, right? That these things exist and that they are, you know, when you think about it, like way back before we were building buildings and driving cars and all this stuff, we lived in nature, right? And we lived off of what God provides us, right? Like as far as food goes and the way we live and so the returning to a lot of that, right? Returning to the juicing and the things that we know our body is meant that are meant to nourish our body, that are meant to take care of our body, of course is going to have an incredible effect on our system. It's that we've moved so far away from that stuff, right? The stuff that actually nourishes our body, that's causing a lot of the problems, you know, a lot of the environmental toxins, a lot of the pollution, a lot of all of these things, you know, even EMFs, I'm sitting in front of a computer, right? And so all of these things are, when you think about it, our body wasn't meant or built to handle. And so when we can go back and learn, you know, the basics of our origins and where we began and what really nourishes our system. That is powerful. And that is where I think true healing, the source of it, is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's certainly, you know, it's kind of funny. The more I research cancer, the less I actually think about the word cancer. And I'm just trying to take it back to like figure out how the body is supposed to function and how the mind is supposed to function and how your energy flow is supposed to function and all that. And just try to, you know, try to figure out what might've gone wrong and how we either correct that imbalance or remove that blockage or, you know, whatever it is. And it's funny you mentioned just nature, cause that's kind of my yardstick or my measuring stick, I guess, when I'm evaluating things, this always comes back to, you know, how does this resonate with living out in the woods in a shack somewhere? Is this going to be something that I would be exposed to in nature? That sort of thing. And, that's, I guess, actually a good analogy for how we live our lives. Cause we're actually, I don't know, like finding the absolute pristine environment for Ryder has always been a kind of an overriding, a guiding theme to our story. You know, the minute that he was diagnosed, like we said, we were already fairly natural minded, but there was certainly plenty of chemical products laying around the house. We took a huge garbage bag and those were gone the next day. When we moved, the first place we could find was in a townhouse complex that was really high in EMFs and that sort of thing. And it was across the street from a cell phone tower. And so we were back out of there within like a month and a half. And like the new house we were finding, we actually had an EMF meter and we were, you know, probably tinfoil hat people to the realtors because we were just walking around around with our little meter thing, just trying to figure out if this place is acceptable.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And we finally found one that was really good. But now we're actually in the process of building a home out in the middle of the woods. It's on 10 acres and no reading there. And we're actually building it
And no service.
I love that.
We're going to be internet personalities out there with no service. But even internet's just satellite out there. So yeah. I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll figure it out. Building it from the ground up with, you know, just non-toxic building materials and all that good stuff. So it's been interesting.
Congratulations. That's so exciting. And, you know, what have you, to go back into what you've learned, what have you learned each, if you both want to answer this, it'd be cool. Like, what have you learned personally, like, not just about Ryder and about healing, but about yourself? Like, you know, when we go through struggles or we go through things like this, especially one that's as big as this, it changes us. It grows us in different ways. And what would you say is the biggest growth that you've had, you know, as individuals from this experience?
I think for me, I've had a huge perspective shift. I mean, to the point where it's just like things that used to bother me, like, don't even faze me at all, because it's just like when you have, you know, literally the most important thing in the world to you is threatened, like all of a sudden your priorities shift really, really quickly. And you realize that, you know, the little problems that like we used to be like sweating about throughout the day, like really mean nothing. And at the end of the day, like if we have each other, like that is enough. That is what we are fighting for. And, you know, the big problems, I think it's just for me, it's a perspective things. Like the things that matter have become crystal clear in my mind.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I guess perspective and I don't know, maybe a little bit of becoming the person you were supposed to be sort of thing. I don't know, like I've always had a bit of a rebellious nature and maybe in high school and college that rebellious nature didn't get put to as good of a use as it could have. But it's, you know,
I like that description that I can picture many things.
But, you know, when all this went down, it really did take, you know, it took us really standing our ground and staying firm on what we believed and not listening to anyone but ourselves for what we thought was right with our kid. And, you know, from there, just really taking our message out into the world and that's, you know, continued to take a strong will and really doing what we know is right and that sort of thing. And I don't know. Yeah, it's just I always have the I always kind of have this sense lately that this is what I was made or what we were made to do. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And too. And it's like we get letters like literally every single day of how, you know, our story or, you know, people following Ryder, you know, has impacted their lives and like their kids, like just by watching Ryder will like eat the vegetables that they put in front of them or take their supplements or, you know, do these amazing things. And it's like, I think sometimes Ryan and I just have to like take a step back and like read those and like actually fully like absorb like the higher meaning of what that is, because it's just like, sometimes it's easy to get like caught up in like just the daily, like what we're doing and the grind, because we are still just going really hard with everything with Ryder too. And I think it's just like, that's so impactful. I mean, I think that's huge.
It is. Yeah. It's amazing. And it's really important to always like take that step back and receive, right? Because you guys, whether you see yourselves as this or not, are healers, right? And you've been doing this with your son, and now you are doing it through your son with other people and helping and supporting, you know, them healing their children and their families. And when we have that in us, right, which I do think you absolutely came to go through this experience and do what you guys are doing and are going to continue to do at bigger levels, is that is that the healer wants to give, right? The healer is a giver. And yet we also have to receive, right? Because there's that yin and yang to it, right? You can't keep giving and not receiving. And so, you know, putting like moments in place where you sit back and just receive all of the goodness that people are getting from all that you're giving, creates that balance, right? That important balance. And it is so easy to just be in the doing and the giving and whatever, and not really let the other stuff land.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just the other day, we got a message from a parent just before. It was like, what, she sent us a before and after picture. It was, you know, her son was, I don't know, a bunch of tubes hooked up to him. He was bald, emaciated, and not looking good. And I guess, you know, his prognosis wasn't good. He'd been through all sorts of conventional treatment. And she said she found us and our story. And, you know, it really got her into all this stuff. And now here he is, you know, a year later, cancer-free. And
said, your son basically saved my son's life. And it's just like, aww. You read that and you're just like, wow. I mean, that matters. And that's, I think that's why we are doing what we're doing.
Ah, it's so beautiful. I just honor you guys. I think it's such incredible work, and it'll be so fun as Ryder starts to grow up and can participate even more and more. Cause I just see him being able to, you know, to step into a leadership role as well. Right. For other kids. It's just going to be so cool. So, to close out the interview, I always ask the same four questions. And first thing that comes to mind is usually the best thing that's meant to come out. And it's based on a process that I take people through called the anatomy of transformation. And there are four pillars to the process. The first pillar is truth, because I believe that the truth heals. And when we get to deeper and deeper truths within ourselves, or whether it be researching, you know, about illness or health or whatever, that it's powerful, that it speaks to us at a very deep level. And the truth isn't always easy, right? But the truth always will set us free. And so what is a truth that you guys have discovered along your journey that was powerful for you?
No one's going to do it for you.
That's so good.
That's been kind of another overriding theme we've realized throughout this whole thing is if we don't do it, it's not going to happen. From, you know, making sure the fundraising is happening, just, you know, even like not even counting on one particular person that said they were going to do a fundraiser for us and didn't. And, you know, we got to find the money somewhere else, that sort of thing. And doing the research and all that. No one's going to do it for you.
I love that. It's really true. And so once we discover like a truth like that, which is powerful, right? Because it kind of thrusts you into action when you discover something like that. There's always something that needs to be released, and releasing can be anything from a limiting belief. It can be releasing people from our lives. It can be releasing the way we've seen things, something that we were expecting that is not happening. What for you, when you had that realization of that truth, like, hey, if it's going to happen, it's going to be us. What did you have to release?
I almost think like our old lives, altogether, with the exception of our immediate family and maybe one or two really close friends on, you know, for Teddy and I. But I think moving states was really symbolic because we really, you know,
we just started over.
It was really just starting over from the ground up, making, you know, entirely new friends that, I don't know, resonated with us a little more than
we didn't know anyone in Utah.
We left
it all behind for Ryder and for, you know, going somewhere that we knew would heal him. And we've stayed here because it turned out that it healed us too.
Yeah. So beautiful. I've talked about on another episode that I just recently did, that release, it can feel like a mini death, right? A death of a time in your life, a death of, you know, a way of being that you were living before that maybe doesn't feel, you know, right to you anymore. And it's kind of like stepping over a threshold, right? Into something new. And the third pillar is called experience. And so once we step over that threshold, life looks different, right? You may have new people in your life. You may have new experiences that you're having. What opened up for you guys when you kind of made this move and stepped over the threshold?
I think for me, I mean, I genuinely wake up every day just so excited, you know, because there's so many just like possibilities and, you know, just amazing things that, like, I know are going to happen, like, just in our immediate, like, home, like, with each other, you know, new experiences that we're having and new people that we're reaching. And it's just, like, just not knowing what the day is going to bring has become, like, I mean, I really look forward to waking up. I don't have, like, oh my gosh, it's Monday. It's like, let's go, let's do this.
I love that. Yeah.
And maybe just to tack onto that, the realization that you can create your reality. And that's something we're, you know, I think realizing more and more as the days go on, as each day goes on. But yeah, I mean, I guess stepping forward from that, no one's going to do it for you, is there's really a lot you can do for yourself if you just don't lose sight.
Yeah, I love that. And the fourth pillar, once we start to experience this new way of being in the world, which continues to grow and expand, right? It's like, because there is infinite possibility, right? So we start seeing more and more in this place of experience. But what happens, and I call it the glue that binds, is the fourth pillar is alignment. And so what we're really doing at a deepest, the deepest level is changing our frequency, right? We're changing the resonance that we're living at. We're changing our energy, and therefore our entire environment changes along with that. And we start attracting new things into our life. So it can be, you know, new friends, new people. Sometimes we even are aligning deeper to our intuition, to our spirit, to whatever is, you know, guiding us in the world. And that becomes like a stronger bond. So what do you guys feel like you've really aligned yourself with?
Well, it's, I don't know. It's funny. You know, we talked about moving and, you know, resonating more with, you know, people that we've attracted to here in our own town. But, it's funny, just the power of the internet and putting ourselves out there the way we have with the website and everything. It's lately that has attracted us to a lot of, you know, really like-minded people that you can't even necessarily find, you know, within your own geographical space, you know, people like you, Shauna, and just, you know, a lot of people that we've been just, aligning with lately. And now all of a sudden we're, you know, traveling to these events and actually getting to hang out with these people in person and just kind of feeling like it's home.
Yeah.
And that we've, you know, these are the kind of people that we've always supposed to been, you know, have been hanging out with.
It's like finding your, I call it your soul family. Oh my gosh, there's this whole world of people that totally gets me and I get them and it's really easy. And, you know, it's like, why wasn't I always hanging out with these people before?
Yeah. No, it's been really neat. And it's the people that we know here in town are awesome. We love them. But then kind of the next level is you don't get to have these types of conversations either about, you know, the type of stuff that we talk about with you or just general, you know, geek out on health stuff. That's it's been really neat getting to meet up with all these people that get it, I guess you could say.
I love that. Well, you two are two very, very special people. And so are your children. And you have a very bright future ahead of you guys that already is so bright right now. But I wish you guys the best with your new place. It sounds amazing. It feels good. It feels like it's going to be a really happy, wonderful place for you guys. And I'm glad I'm your friend. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story and sharing your wisdom, because I know there are going to be people listening to this needing to hear this. And so thank you so much.
Thank you, Shauna.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, Shauna.
Let's talk about taking some serious action. Our take action item this week is to write down in your journal, and if you don't have one, go ahead and get a simple journal, the 10 biggest things you want to accomplish in 2018. I know you may have more than 10, but really, we just want to focus on the top 10 most important ones. And tune in next week where we'll be talking about how to manage stress, and we're going to be going deeper with our 10 most important intentions for the year ahead. I'm off for now, and as always, I'm sending you tons of positive vibes for the week ahead and lots of love.